You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Thank you for tuning in for this Unity Partner Program. Unity Online Radio partners with spiritual leaders from organizations whose mission and messages complement Unity's. We are pleased to bring you this program on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Thank you for tuning in for The Soul-Directed Life with your host, Janet Connor. If you're ready to identify and connect with the voice of your soul, find a comfy seat, grab your journal, and get ready because this hour will be filled with ideas and questions you'll want to capture in deep soul writing. Now, here's your host, Janet Connor. Go
inside. Welcome. Welcome to The Soul-Directed Life, the radio show that helps you notice, recognize, and respond to the calls bubbling up from your soul so you can live a soul-directed life. I'm your host, Janet Connor, author of Writing Down Your Soul, celebrating her 7th birthday and 8th printing this year. The Lotus and the Lily, a book that thousands of people around the world use to create a truly beautiful and abundant life, following the wisdom, the original teachings of a Buddha, the Lotus and Lily, Jesus. And the third book in the Your Soul Wants Five Things series came out last year, a year ago, Soul Vows. Soul Vows is the mystical practice that answers the very sacred question, how shall I live? And I never thought I'd be saying this, but I am the author of a coloring book. But it is a very unusual coloring book, the first and only adult coloring book that goes way beyond coloring, offering you five different ways to access your soul's brilliant, beautiful, creative imagination. It's called the Soul Discovery Coloring Book, Noodle, Doodle, and Scribble Your Way to an Extraordinary Life. She's available now around the world. International order buttons, videos, bookmarks, all kinds of fun goodies from Christine Pensa, the artist, and me at janetconnor.com. Our big circle theme this year on the radio show comes directly from the coloring book. The theme is the life cycle of nature and creativity. So visualize yourself planning, nurturing, harvesting a garden. That garden is you. That garden is your extraordinary life. Well, we began building that garden in January, opening to possibility. In February, choosing our seeds. In March, nourishing them with five different rich kinds of spiritual food. Now in April, we are meeting our teachers. Our big, beautiful question this whole month has been, how can I recognize my teachers? Well, a few that we recognized are crystals and essential oils, thanks to Margaret Ann Lembo. And then Amy Scher helped us tune into a teacher who's not too far away, our bodies. And Tamarack Song helped us not just learn from our animal teachers, but become our animal teachers. Today, this rich month, a month I kind of hate to say goodbye to because I have so many teachers I adore. But our beautiful conversation comes to an end today with a dear friend of the show, Christine Valters-Paintner, who will help us hear the wisdom of the mystics. What we are about to hear has the potential to change us and change us at depth. To help that happen, let's ask the voice of the Tibetan bowl to call us to listen. and listen very deeply. Whew. She's still singing. She's calling in the mystics for you, Christine.
Fabulous.
See, I can see them coming. Here comes Rilke. Here comes Thomas Merton. Here comes Mother Mary. And she's still singing. She gets faint, so I don't think the radio audience can hear her, but she's still singing. So I want to tell the listeners very quickly about Christine so we can dive into this glorious conversation and beautiful new book. She's an abbess. I think Christine might be the only abbess I've had on my show. She's an online abbess for the Abbey of the Arts, a virtual monastery offering rich classes, retreats, and resources on contemplative practice and creative expression. Her doctorate in Christian spirituality is from the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley, and she is a registered expressive arts consultant and educator with the International Expressive Arts Therapy Association. She's the author of books I adore, Lectio Divina, Water, Wind, Earth, and Fire, The Artist's Rule, The Soul of a Pilgrim, and many others, but she joins us today to share the wisdom of, some magnificent teachers in her brand new book, Illuminating the Way. She also writes an exciting column on Pathos for Progressive Christianity. She leads pilgrimages in Ireland, Austria, Germany. I so want to fly across the pond and go to a retreat in Ireland. But for those who can't do that, she has magnificent online retreats at her website as well. Christine is living her commitment as a Benedictine oblate in Galway, Ireland, with her husband John, and joins us today from Galway. Welcome again, Christine.
Thank you, Janet. It's really wonderful to be here.
I love. I'm happy already just hearing your voice, and I so look forward. I look forward to all the guests opening invocations, but yours the last couple of times just took my breath away. Would you draw us together, no matter where we are in the world right now, into our big, beautiful question, how can we recognize our teachers?
Yes, I'd be happy to. And so this is each chapter of my book closes with a poem that I wrote. And this is a poem that was inspired by the poet René Maria Rilke, who's one of the mystics included. And the poem is really, I think, about how the world kind of teaches us about spirit and soulfulness. So it's called This Is Not a Poem. This is not a poem, but a rain-soaked day, keeping me inside with you, and you loving me like a storm. This is not a poem, but a record of 100 mornings when the sun lifted above the stone hills outside my window. This is time for boiling water poured into the chipped cup holding elderflower, hawthorn, mugwort. This is not a poem, but me standing perfectly still on the edge of the lake in autumn, watching 100 starlings like prayer flags fluttering. This is my face buried in May's first pink peony, petals just now parting, eyes closed inhaling. This is not a poem, but the field beyond thought and judgment and the ways I tear myself apart on too many fine days. This is the place where clocks no longer matter unless it is the dusty gold watch which belonged to my grandfather. This is not a poem, but me standing desolate in a parade of white gravestones when a single bluebird lands and sings. This is the bunch of Gerbera daisies you handed to me one foggy February afternoon, pale yellow like the long-forgotten sun. And this is the first bite of bread after too many hungry days. This is my grandmother whispering her secrets to me after dusk. This is not a poem, but me taking off my clothes and stepping eagerly into the cold mid-December sea. And this is the silence between breaths. And in that stillness, this is me saying yes and yes and yes.
Oh, Christine. I'm certain Rilke is laughing and clapping.
I hope so, for sure.
Did you feel his presence when you wrote that poem? It does sound like him to me. It does.
Yeah, I'm very inspired and shaped by his vision of the world, and particularly I think this idea for me of that we're really put on this earth to experience all the textures and contours of our life as it is, like in its very incarnational form. And so for me, it was kind of like this sense of, like, what would a poem be that would celebrate the poetry of life, you know, which I think is what he was all about. So.
Isn't he the one who said being here is, truly being here is so much?
I think so. I think so. That's a beautiful, beautiful quote. Yeah.
I'm not remembering it in context right now, but I'm remembering somebody, maybe it was you, because I read every single word of every one of your newsletters.
And
this could have actually been, could have been you, but somebody brought my attention in whatever they were reading back to this appreciation. I mean, how can we take this for granted? How can we possibly, if we're just in our bodies, smelling the air, fully present, then look around, being here, truly being here, is so much.
Exactly. Like, life is just the greatest teacher if we just pay attention. All the aspects of it.
Exactly. And that's why I said I can't, I mean, how can this month, this topic can't end, even if we had 52 shows this year on this topic. Everybody is a teacher. Everything. When Robert Moss was on the show, he said something that really, it's still resonating, and I just hear him every once in a while when I look at something that looks small and insignificant. Nothing is nothing.
Mm.
Nothing is nothing. Mm-hmm. Everything is everything.
Mm-hmm. That's brilliant. Brilliant.
Or, of course, being here. Oh, and being here with you is
across the ocean.
But, yeah, I mean,
via the wonders of technology.
Exactly. I'm in Florida speaking to you in Galway, Ireland. The listeners are receiving this out from Unity's headquarters in Unity Village, Missouri. And I know from the people who comment on the show that they're in Ireland, New Zealand, Germany, Italy, Hawaii, all across Canada. It really is miraculous, isn't it, that we are able.
Yeah, I'm so grateful to be living in this day and age. The global sense of community and connection is just such a gift. Certainly for the Abbey, it's been that way.
You as an online abbess, of course. I mean, that just couldn't even exist without the wonder technology. So I think, Christine, that most of the listeners own a few of your books. They've heard you on the show. They've heard bits of your story. But I don't think I've ever asked you to talk about moving to Ireland. So, A, where'd that come from? Because you were in Seattle, if I remember correctly. And what impact has living in Ireland had on you, your writing, and your spiritual life?
That's a big question. And Ireland has been such a gift in our lives. Basically, about 4 years ago, my husband and I were just ready for an adventure, kind of a midlife pilgrimage, what we called it. He was teaching high school for 12 years in Seattle and was just ready for a change. And there was a whole number of events, synchronicities that pointed us that this was the right moment to just do it. And so we sold everything we owned, and we actually moved to Vienna, Austria first, because my father was Austrian. He died 20 years ago, but he had Austrian citizenship. So I have dual citizenship with the U.S. and Austria, and always wanted to live in Vienna. And we had an amazing 6 months there. For a lot of reasons, it didn't work out. And I think in part, it didn't work out because we were really being called to Ireland. And Ireland is, it was sort of the next step. Like, it was always in our mind that we wanted to live in Ireland as well. And when we set out on the journey, we didn't know for how long, but now we're actually about to buy a house. So we're making a commitment long term. And, yeah, it's very exciting. So it's really just this sense of, it's funny because I knew about the stories of the Irish monks before we came, but it didn't really like register with me how much we were kind of following this ancient practice of what's called peregrinatio, which is basically means wandering for the love of God. And this idea that the monks would wander basically from place to place to kind of find what they call the place of their resurrection. And it was definitely the sense of calling. And so I think that that's what happened to us. We were wandering looking for, you know, and Seattle was an amazing place for us. We loved it, but there was still like this like urge to find something more. And I think we're finding it here in Ireland. A lot of it has to do with the landscape. It's just a stunning place. We're on the west coast of Ireland by the ocean, the elements, the granite of the mountains, the limestone hills across the bay, the fierceness of the wind in the winter, all of the monastic ruins that are just like saturating the landscape. I knew monasticism was a big part of Irish history here, but I didn't have any idea just how much until I realized how many monastic ruins there are just within an hour's drive of where we live. And, the poetry, the people, we live in a very vibrant, arts community, arts city. Galway is known for its arts. And so in my own life, my poetry has sort of been reawakened and re-inspired, writing poetry. And, of course, doing the pilgrimages, which isn't what we set out to do, but what we absolutely love is like showing people these amazing sacred places. And my husband's gotten involved in theater and film communities here because there's a lot of, there's some just great things happening here. So it's really like opened us up, I think, to all these new layers in our lives that we didn't even know really were missing until we kind of took the step off the edge and went on the adventure.
Peregrinatio.
Yeah, it's not a great word.
You just even want to say it and it makes your toes tingle and say, well, where are we peregrinating to? Let's go. So you live in John O'Donohue land, huh?
Yeah. He would have grown up and, you know, lived in the Burren south of us, which is, you know, just on the other side of Galway Bay. And then he lived in Connemara later in his life, which is just on the other side of the bay, right next to us in the west, west of Galway. So yeah, it's wonderful. And his spirit is definitely still very much alive in this place and the poetry and places that he loved as well.
And are you, when you go on those pilgrimages and explore the monastic ruins, the one that comes to mind immediately to me, and I know I couldn't even begin to say it in Gaelic, but it's Kevin. Kevin, isn't that the 11th century? Have you been there?
To Glendalough?
Yes, thank you.
Yes. Glendalough is one of my favorite places that's not in the West Coast, because the West Coast really is my favorite. It tends to be wilder. But there's a lot of amazing places in Ireland, but Glendalough is very beautiful. It's south of Dublin, and we've actually led a pilgrimage there last spring for young adults, and it was wonderful. There's all these hiking trails and just such a rich sense of the sacred in the monastic city that's left there, and it's really a beautiful place.
So did you write this book, Illuminating the Way, after you moved? Did you write it in Ireland?
I did. It's sort of, the seeds were sort of planted. It actually started as a series of icons. So it actually started as a visual art project. What happened was I was actually on a bus from Galway City to Dublin Airport to fly to Germany to lead a pilgrimage on Hildegard of Bingen. So it was about 3 years ago. And all of a sudden, I was on the bus. I remember this, and I had this image of what would it be like to have a series of what I call dancing monk icons, because dancing monk is kind of at the heart of sort of the imagery of Abbey of the Arts and what we do, this idea of being a joyful contemplative in the world. And I knew immediately who I wanted to ask to paint these icons, this artist Marcy Hall, who I've worked with before in Erie, Pennsylvania. And I sent her the message, and she was very enthusiastic. And then, of course, I thought, well, how many of these do I want? And I thought, well, 12 just sort of seems like a very archetypal biblical number. And they just sort of like evolved slowly, in terms of, how we chose the different monks and mystics. It's not like I had the 12 kind of all come to me at once, but we basically started with this series of paintings. Then my dear friend Betsy Beckman, who's a liturgical dancer, she said, why don't we have some of our musician friends compose songs to go with each of these 12 monks and mystics, which I thought was fabulous. And then Betsy said, because she's the dancer, said, why don't I choreograph some dances to go with this? So we have resources that are CDs and DVDs with the songs and the videos. And then, of course, me being the writer, decided that I would really wanted to dive into the lives of these mystics. And really, I'm not sure how this came about other than I've had a long love of Jungian ideas, and I've worked with a Jungian analyst as my spiritual director for many, many years now, been very involved in Jungian programs. And so this idea of the archetypes, these energies that are present in each of us, was really compelling to me as like a new way to explore the gifts that the mystics have for us. And so, that's kind of how the book came about. And then I basically thought of each of these mystics and what kind of was the archetype that they might evoke or invite into each one of us. What part of us might they bring alive? And I thought it might be a new way of entering into that kind of those figures, you know, those great teachers.
Well, it's such a rich, complete experience. It's an experience right down to a T that is blended. I mean, it's just that you can't have more fun than this wonderful book, Illuminating the Way. So when we come back from our break, Christine is going to help us see how the archetype and the mystic of Thomas Merton, Hildegard of Bingen, and I'm also going to ask her to choose her favorite, which is probably like asking someone to choose their favorite child. But nevertheless, let's dive into Thomas Merton, Hildegard of Bingen, and Christine's favorite.
Wouldn't you like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives.
Spirit of Recovery is the place where spirituality and recovery meet, where we support your spiritual growth. Reverend Anna Schaus, PhD, interviews down-to-earth guests who share with you how they keep going and growing in recovery. Spirit of Recovery is the place to get practical tips and join in lively discussions on topics that matter to recovering people. This program welcomes everyone who wants to know more about recovery. Join Anna and her guests live every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Central Time on Spirit of Recovery, where we talk about what keeps you growing. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
The benefits of spiritually conscious living start now. For a time-tested method to live with purpose and release your infinite potential, tune in to the Yoga Hour, Living the Eternal Way, with Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Pacific, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
You're listening to The Soul Directed Life with Janet Connor. Do you have a question or comment? Join the conversation by calling 888-55-UNITY. That's 888-558-6489. Or post your comments on Janet's professional Facebook page, Janet Connor, The Soul Directed Life, or on Twitter with the hashtag Soul Directed Life. Now, back to the program and your host, Janet.
So excited about sharing Thomas Merton with all of the listeners. But first, I do want to remind everyone to come on Janet Connor, The Soul Directed Life, the Facebook page dedicated to this show, and tell us not just your reactions, your responses, your feelings about this conversation with Christine, but also your teachers, the mystics that are calling you. They don't have to call you all the way to Ireland. You don't have to move across the pond, but you still might be feeling a real call. Who are they? We'd so love to share the juicy bits with one another from our teachers who are illuminating our way. One of the listeners who joins the conversation and offers their 7 cents will receive a copy of this rich, beautiful, full-color book with all of those icons illuminating the way. A treasure. This book is a treasure. So, Christine, I had the hardest time. I look at the table of contents. I look at all 12 archetypes. I look at all 12 mystics. I want to talk to you about all of them. I love all of them. I want to know more about all of them. But in the end, if I had to choose one, it would be Thomas Merton, because I read him. John O'Donohue and Kabir Helminski would be the three I probably read the most. Mm-hmm. I've got his Thomas Merton reader next to my reading table, Thoughts in Solitude. Oh, my God, I love that book. Nude Seeds of Contemplation. And sometimes when I just don't even know, I don't know, what do I need to read today? I'll just turn to him and say, Thomas, you want to have coffee with me? And take one of his books without fail, without fail. He hands me an idea. He helps me see through his eyes. And the day is a Wilka kind of day. Just being here is so much through Thomas Merton's eyes. So would you introduce us to Thomas Merton and how he illuminates the way?
Absolutely. Well, there's a lovely quote at the beginning of the chapter, and I thought I would share that because it kind of captures some of his vision for me that I think is really beautiful. He says that, this is from his book, New Seeds of Contemplation, and he says that the world and time are the dance of the Lord and emptiness. The silence of the spheres is the music of a wedding feast. The more we persist in misunderstanding the phenomena of life, the more we analyze them into strange finalities and complex purposes of our own, the more we involve ourselves in sadness, absurdity, and despair. But it does not matter much, because no despair of ours can alter the reality of things or stain the joy of the cosmic dance, which is always there. Indeed, we are in the midst of it, and it is in the midst of us, for it beats in our very blood, whether we want it to or not. And then he just finishes by saying, we're invited to forget ourselves on purpose, cast our solemnity to the wind, and join in the general dance. And so when I read this quote years and years ago, it was actually part of the planting the seeds for this image of dancing monks for me, because it was this invitation to see how so much of the anxiety that we carry in life is, you know, our own concoction, and that at the found, like, my faith is that it, at the very foundation of everything is this joyful exuberance of overflowing love. And so Merton, for me, he lived at this moment when he opened up the doors of the contemplative riches, particularly of the Christian tradition, and then of course later dialoguing with Buddhism, where he really makes, you know, the gifts of living a way of life that is slow and savoring and contemplative and all of those things, like, really accessible to the everyday person, not just, like, I don't have to go off to live in a monastery to be able to live in this way. And so one of the brilliant things to me about this is, so in this chapter, I connect him to the archetype of the monk, because I believe very strongly that each of us has an inner monk, whether or not we live in a monastery or whether we live, you know, in a, you know, little apartment with a family and work a job at a bank, you know, however it is, we all have this part of ourselves where we feel drawn towards this kind of way of being in the world that is more attentive, more mindful, more present. And I would say for me in monastic tradition, particularly in the Benedictine tradition of which Thomas Merton was a part through the Trappists, there's a sense of the sacredness of all people that we meet. So there's this idea of every person that I encounter is the face of God. There's this idea that time is holy, so each unfolding moment, there's the sacredness of time. And then there's the idea that all things are holy, and Benedict talks about how even the kitchen utensils are as sacred as the items in the monastery at the altar. And I love that idea because I think that in particular, like, speaks to our hearts as lay people living in the world. How do I treat my life with reverence? The people that I meet, the unfolding of time, how do I treat the objects? I write about that a lot in The Artist's Rule, of course, is even the implements of writing itself, you know, being these sacred tools, just like the sacred on the altar. And so I guess for me, Merton is this window into a contemplative way of being that is really like a challenge to the dominant way in our world, which is to rush, to be productive, to always be doing, as opposed to this invitation into a space of being and receiving and attending and all of those luscious words that I love. I have a very strong inner monk, so my inner monk gets very activated by Merton's ideas and invitations.
Well, then I must have an inner monk too. Because he does. He speaks at such a deep level. Often, though, talking about something that's right in front of you, something that can initially be simple, one quote, and then, he's off some magnificent, and all you can do is dance behind him and go, okay, well, where are we going next? And suddenly everything is so holy. Yeah, that's it really, right? It's all just so holy.
Absolutely.
So another one in the book who talk about dancing, the holy dance, is Hildegard of Bingen. And I was so moved that you wrote that she was your doorway into the Benedictine life. Would you introduce us to Hildegard?
Yeah, absolutely. So Hildegard, she was an amazing woman and a visual artist. She had visions that were illuminated. She was a writer and poet, a musician, a prophet, a herbalist, a preacher, an abbess. And I'll just read a little quote from her. Fire of the Holy Spirit, life of the life of every creature, holy are you in giving life to forms. Rivers spring forth from the waters. Earth wears her green vigor. And I love that image of the green vigor because one of Hildegard's central ideas is a word called viriditas. So we had peregrinatio before, also a Latin word. And she kind of coined this term viriditas, which means the greening power of God, or the greening life force that animates everything in the world. And I connect her to the archetype of the visionary. Now, she was such an amazing woman, she probably could have had a whole book on just all the different archetypes that she represents. But I think for me, like this vision that she has of the world, of seeing, again, it's kind of connected to the seeing the sacred and everything, but being able to see the greening life force at work. And so she does this beautiful thing where she, this greening, energy that she talks about it in relationship to the divine. So, you know, Mary and all the saints are all depicted as, you know, wearing green and being in this lush greenness. But it's also human beings. We can sort of discern the, sort of the state of our spiritual health by the green, moist, fecund fertility of our lives, or those times when we feel really dry and arid and distant from the divine. And she sees this also like alive in our bodies. So, she was a herbalist, which, I think she was one of the first women, maybe even people in general, to write down, a lot of the texts, the medicinal texts of the time. And so she had this passion for physical healing as well as soul healing. And for her, this viriditas, this greening life energy, is sort of what unifies them together, you know, that we can look at there's a really wonderful book, called God's Hotel. It's written by Dr. Victoria Sweet. She was a medical doctor in San Francisco, and she writes about discovering Hildegard of Bingen and this idea of the greening life force, and bringing that awareness to working with her patients, which were in long-term convalescence. And so she was able to start asking, like, where is this greening life energy being blocked in my patients? And she had this remarkable success by really, it kind of goes back to the slowness of the monk, like being able to just slowly observe and be present and be mindful and discover, like, what's happening in there with her patients. And so for me, yeah, Hildegard, she was this first doorway. I actually wasn't that interested in monasticism when I first started my graduate studies. And I discovered Hildegard, and I fell in love with her because I've always had a love of the arts. And I just wanted to know more about her. And when I found out she was a Benedictine abbess, then I wanted to know even more about her. And she kind of brought me on this whole journey. So I call her the patron saint of my becoming a Benedictine oblate, because she was so instrumental in sort of inspiring me on my path. And I think for me, that, you know, tapping into those visionary qualities, like how do we see the world beneath the world, you know, or behind the world, however we want to imagine that. How do we see a reality that's more clearly present, perhaps in intuitive spaces or dreaming kinds of spaces or creative spaces, that's not, you know what I mean? That's a different kind of reality from the more linear, logical world that we live in. And I think she so excelled at that, at being able to see that kind of, the life force and the possibilities when we open ourselves to that. So for me, she invites us into our own inner visionaries.
And she sang it, or chanted it, her prayers, her music are just, mm-hmm. they open that doorway into another realm.
Absolutely. And one of the things I love, when we lead a pilgrimage on Hildegard of Bingen in Germany, in the Rhine Valley where she lives, so not only do you have the landscape, But then we get to share her visual illuminations. We share the music, the poetry. We work with the herbs that she worked with. So there's like this multi-sensory immersion in her world, which I love, because you don't get that opportunity very often with a lot of these historical figures, you know, to have so many avenues of entry into their world.
But that's exactly what Illuminating the Way does, right down to, I'm so tickled by the tease. You know, oh, if I put a little of this and a little of this and a little of this and consciously drink it, then I am opening to King David, opening to Dorothy Day, opening to Bridget. I mean, it's just, it is a multi-sense, while it's a book. Mm-hmm. You really help us open all our senses, visible and invisible. And that's how the mystics help us illumine the way. Mm-hmm. So now it's your turn. I had to hear you talk about Merton and Hildegard. Who do you want to talk about?
Well, I'm going to pick Brendan today just because I wanted to talk about an Irish saint. Bridget and Brendan are both very close to my heart. But there's something about Brendan the Navigator, as he's known. And for me, he's really the archetype of the pilgrim. And it really connects back to our earlier conversation about my journey to Ireland and this idea of peregrinatio and going on these adventures and wandering for the love of God. And so Brendan, you know, he's this remarkable figure. I think he's about 6th century. I never remember my dates very well. But he basically has this desire. He hears from another monk that this other monk has gone to this, it's called the island promised to the saints. And so Brendan gets it into his mind and his heart that he really wants to go there. And it's sort of that's really the archetype of the promised land, which I think is, you know, part of the impetus for the pilgrimage is that we're seeking out, you know, this promised land, which for us, you know, for each person will be different. That place that really brings us alive, that place that kind of infuses us with a sense of the eternal. And so he gathers his monks together. They set out in a little boat. He goes first to the island of Inishmore, which is just off the coast here in Galway Bay, a beautiful place in the Aran Islands. And he gets his blessing from Saint Enda, who's another significant monk in the Irish tradition. And then they head off on their journey, and it's this remarkable journey where they pass by all these islands. They land on some of them. There's like the island that's covered with sheep. There's the island that has the trees covered with the birds. Then my favorite one is, they land on this island that doesn't have any trees on it. They sleep there overnight, and when they wake up in the morning, they realize that they're on the back of a whale. And so, and then it's Easter morning, so Brendan celebrates Easter Mass on the back of a whale. And I just love that image because there's something particularly in the stories of the Irish monks about their kinship with creatures and animals and the intimacy with the animals that is really significant. But he basically journeys around. He thinks it's going to take him like a day or two to get to this island, and it takes him 7 years. And not only that, he goes around in circles. So in the story, he keeps revisiting every Easter for 7 years. He ends up back on this whale. And it's sort of this wonderful description, I think, of our own archetypal inner life of, you know, the ways that we set out for we have maybe a particular goal in mind, and we end up finding ourselves going in circles and circles and maybe feeling frustrated at that. And in the story, Brendan's kind of like, okay, what's up, God? Like, I'm ready to get there. And really, this story is about how there's a wonderful line from Cynthia Bourgeau, who's an amazing contemplative teacher. And she says that at the end of the story, that Brendan realizes that he is the veil that hides the paradise he seeks. And I just find that such a profound line, because I feel like that is the journey of the inner pilgrim, right? We set out and we're searching for something outside of us until we finally realize that the obstacle to seeing it has been inside of us all along. And then when we finally let that go, then he finally does actually make it to the island, Promise of the Saints. And then he's allowed to spend a little bit of time there. And then he has to go back to daily life, because that's part of the reality. So there's this wonderful, I love obviously the archetype of the pilgrim, since that has been very active in me in the last few years, and this sense of being called on a journey beyond my comfort zone. Even the root of the word pilgrim in the Latin means stranger, and there's a lot about the journey of the pilgrim is really to extend beyond our securities and our comfort zone, to sort of stretch us into places we wouldn't normally go. And in that process of all of our expectations being torn away from us, then we discover what's really important and true. And so those are some of the things that kind of Brendan makes me just delight in, having gone through that journey now.
Well, now you have helped us delight in him, because I would assume all the listeners are nodding their head like I am and kind of laughing at ourselves. Yeah. How many years have we been back on the whale?
Yeah, I know. I just love the story.
And then saying to God, like it's God's, hello, wait a second.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what's that quote again about the veil? I want to write that down and take it to my deep soul writing, that he realized he is the veil.
Yes, exactly. It says he realizes he is the veil that hides the paradise he sees.
That hides the paradise. That's
it. Because the paradise is actually really there all along. We just are so good at constructing the veils. So.
And then constructing all these stories about how life is so hard and we can't find. Well, thank you for introducing us to Brendan, because I confess, until I saw your book, I didn't know really anything about Brendan. A couple of images, maybe. So it's a magnificent introduction. And that's one of the precious things about this book, is you introduce us to Benedict of Nursia, Dorothy Day, Amma Syncletica.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so this is lovely to have I feel like I'm at a dinner, a smorgasbord, and I can sit down with all of these different monks and mystics, and they all illuminate something in me. It's a real treasure. You've really written. Oh, I adore all your books, Christine. But this one is a real treasure. So how can readers, listeners find you, find your books, find your retreats? Give us all your contact information, and Marina Phillips will post it on the Facebook page for the show.
Well, the website is abbeyofthearts.com. That's ABBEY ofthearts.com. And you can email me at Christine@abbeyofthearts.com. We also have a Facebook page for Abbey of the Arts. We also have a private group called the Holy Disorder of Dancing Monks, which is a free place for conversation with other dancing monks, if you identify so or are curious about it. And it's private, just so that the conversations are kept within the walls of that particular monastery, virtual monastery. But anybody is welcome to join. And and if you sign up, we have a newsletter that comes out, a weekly newsletter, and you can also even get a daily quote if you'd like. But there's a weekly newsletter, and you can get access to a free online course called Monk Becoming a Monk in the World. If Merton kind of inspired you and you want to discover more about what your inner monk might be asking of you.
And I so recommend all of that. I've loved the online retreat, and I so love your newsletters and your blogs at Pathos. So do you have any upcoming retreats that we can get excited about?
Well, we have an online retreat this summer. It's a 12-week online course called Way of the Monk, Path of the Artist. And it's a kind of a journey to accompany my book, The Artist's Rule. So it's a wonderful way. I find that working through these things in community is really wonderful. And so there's a great community that gathers for that. And so there's some inspiration and some structure and some guidance how to work through that. And then I'll have some teleconference calls to kind of give extra input into that. And then we also have pilgrimages. All our pilgrimages for 2016 are full, but we have all of our dates for 2017 are up on our website. So those are other wonderful ways to connect, because in person is the best way if it's possible.
Ireland is calling.
Ireland gets its hold on you, and you just don't leave.
I won't let go. I think that's why I'm afraid to go. I am Irish. And I think I'm Irish on all sides. And I think if I got my little toes on that soil, she might hold on and not let go. Ireland is calling. There's no question. Well, you've given us the sweetest taste, not just of your book, Illuminating the Way, but of the monks and the mystics, and of a new way of opening our eyes and really perceiving how precious and holy and sacred this life is. So in the few minutes that we have left, could you give the listeners some wisdom on how they can enter into a deep relationship with their own teachers?
Well, I think my recommendation is, you know, if you read through the book and there's one that particularly shimmers for you, shimmers is a word I like to use to describe, you know, when we have this kind of emotional response, a charge for something. And it could also be like something where one of the mystics that's described kind of creates a resistance in you as well. And to kind of trust that emotional response as a key. And then I really recommend taking maybe even a year just to dive deep into that one person's writings, their wisdom, writings about them. Let them become your soul friend, you know, for a period of time. There's so much resources out there, and sometimes we want to gulp it all down. But there's just some real beauty in letting, inviting one person just to kind of sit next to us for an extended period of time and seeing what everything that we can find on that person and then what kind of wisdom they might have to offer for us. It also could be you ask a spiritual director or a soul friend in your life to recommend someone to you that they think might help you kind of journey through this next season of your life.
Is there someone in particular right now that you are reading and exploring and studying?
You know, I'm really feeling drawn to go deeper with Brendan, actually, and I think that's why he's feeling so alive for me. I've been working with the text is called the Navigatio, that it's about his journey, and I've been really looking at, it's such a rich story, and I've been really looking at it as an archetype for the writing process. And, you know, as a writer, I haven't actually written a lot about being a writer. So I think that's kind of time. So that'll be a future project, but I'm really diving into, now of course we don't have much written by Brendan himself, but there's a lot of texts that comment on that story. And then there's a lot of parallels between his journey and previous journeys in the Celtic mythology, kind of journeys to the other world. So it's kind of an exciting adventure, and just listening for all the ways that he's inviting me deeper, particularly into the writing life. Cause right now that's sort of where it feels most alive is that parallel for me, discovering that more deeply.
Well, thank you for sharing that. It's a topic of endless excitement and devotion for me, because writing for me is a spiritual practice. You can't separate, these are my prayers, this is my writing. It's all one deep soul dive into the joy of living. And I love reading writers talking about writing. So rest assured, your first fan is already waiting for the book on writing. Oh, Christine, what a magnificent conversation. What a glorious month.
It's a joy to have you again on the Soul Directed Life. Oh, this month has simply been astonishing. But it's time to take our fifth step around the life cycle of nature and creativity next week as we enter May with an essential topic. But guess what? It's one we want to avoid: our shadows. So our big, beautiful question is, how do I embrace the wisdom of my shadows? Michael Lennox will be with us on Thursday, the dream expert. You want to meet your shadows? They're showing up in your dreams every single night. He will help us interpret and learn from our shadow dreams. Then J.A. Kent is with us to talk about the goddess and the shaman. And then one of my very first teachers, Carol Pearson, author of The Hero Within, the archetype book that really set me on my journey. She is going to be with us to talk about her brand new book, Persephone Rising. What an archetype. And we end with The Book of She by Sarah Avant Stover. An incredible, rich month ahead. If you'd like to know all the themes, all the guests, when you're at JanetConnor.com looking at the coloring book, subscribe to the newsletter. Until next week, may you hear and heed all the calls bubbling up from your soul, because they're coming from a mystic, and live a soul-directed life.
I will leave this world as it is, go inside to find my God.
Thank you for listening to The Soul-Directed Life with Janet Connor. To activate the ideas you heard today, grab a pen and explore them for yourself in deep soul writing. Please post your comments about this and all Janet's shows on Facebook at Janet Connor, The Soul Directed Life, and on Twitter with the hashtag Soul Directed Life. Join us every Thursday at 1 p.m. Central for live discussions on The Soul Directed Life. This program is brought to you by Janet Connor, author of the bestseller Writing Down Your Soul, and The Lotus and the Lily, the first book to unravel the great paradox of prosperity. Learn more about Janet Connor and her Your Soul Wants Five Things learning series at JanetConnor.com.
Go inside to find my God. Go inside.
If I were brave, I'd walk the razor's edge where fools and dreamers dare to tread and never lose faith.
How is life working for you? Would it be okay with you if life got easier, simpler, yet more meaningful and vibrant? Join certified life coach Carla McClellan Tuesday afternoons for Vibrant Living. Each week, Coach Carla and her guests will share strategies and solutions designed to make your life more vibrant. Is there something in your life you'd like help with? A dream you'd like to achieve? A relationship you'd like to improve? Call into the show toll-free for Coaching with Carla. That's Vibrant Living, Life Coaching with Carla. Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Central on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
What if we're all meant to do what we secretly dream?
How often, before even beginning, have we declared something impossible? In our mind, we often picture ourselves as inadequate or consider a task too great to attain. Much of our success depends on the thoughts we hold in mind. Our experience depends even more on the persistence with which we affirm those thoughts. A wise person said, "It's a funny thing about life. If you refuse to accept anything but the best, you very often get it." In Unity, we believe in the power of words and thoughts held in mind. If you sincerely ask yourself, "How do I really think things ought to be?" you may be surprised at your answer. You are destined to do great works. Expect it and see the positive changes in your world.
This message has been brought to you by the Association of Unity Churches International. To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Are you ready for deeper spiritual breakthroughs? Have you wondered how to apply spiritual principles to your everyday life in practical ways? Do you feel your soul is calling you to deeper purposes? Join Reverend Galen McDowell live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central for Truth Transforms, a discussion on how God within you, as you, is the power to transform your life. If you really believe that consciousness determines your experiences and that you are an individualized expression of God, join us as we help awaken and transform the consciousness of humanity. We will discuss, through lecture, live interviews, and call-in questions, spiritual healing, prayer, prosperity, forgiveness, new thought views about eternal life, and much more. The world is waiting for your truth transformation, only on Unity Online Radio.